Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Atlanta Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Welcome to this very special edition of Atlanta Business Radio. It is time for our Atlanta Cares radio series. So before we dive into the show, this is we're like maybe 2-3 episodes in. Can you just kind of walk us through mission and purpose of this show? What are you trying to do with this show?
So Atlanta Cares Radio is all about showcasing the businesses, nonprofits, and talent that add to the flavor of the Atlanta area. So we've got three guests here today who are going to talk about rock climbing, and the episode is called our Climbing and Community episode.
Fantastic. All right. Well, who'd you bring with you?
So first up, we've got Savannah Manning. She's an avid rock climber and explorer with a tendency towards entrepreneurial endeavors. After graduating from Georgia Southern University, she traveled North America climbing big mountains and working odd jobs until she started a rock climbing company in the eastern United States. So she's going to talk to us about today. But first, Savannah, what was the oddest odd job you had? I'm curious.
Oh, my gosh. Well, I was a horse wrangler.
A horse wrangler.
Yeah, I took care of horses for a while. And cats. Yeah, a couple
horses
other like
cats.
Farm. Yeah, just horses and cats mostly.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. A lot of skills tie over between the two. No,
it was a lot of shoveling poop. Honestly,
a lot of shoveling poop. Okay, so you're not afraid to get your hands dirty.
Not
that's
really.
A good thing with a climbing guide.
That's kind of my MO.
Very cool. Well, so your company is called Space Below Your Feet, and it's got a pretty interesting name and logo. I was wondering if you could tell us the story behind that.
Yeah, so I put a lot of thought into this name, and it comes from a book called Space Below My Feet, which is a famous British climber. Her name is Gwen Moffitt. She was the first woman to become a mountain guide back in the 1940s, and yeah, she wrote a really phenomenal book, was really pushing kind of the tides back in the day. It was the first to climb some of these really big mountains before even the guys were doing it, so...
Wow.
We have an all-female team, and we started initially as a company called She Moves Mountains, East Coast. So we switched our branding to Space Below Your Feet to be a bit more inclusive to all genders, but still keeping that foundation.
Very cool. And your logo kind of looks like two teardrops with some mountains. Is that symbolic of anything? Or?
Yeah. So my, I guess, business partner, Carrie Day Victoria Michael, she designed that logo with the idea of the figure eight follow through knot in mind. So if you know what the figure eight follow through knot is, it looks like a figure eight and it has those little circles. So yeah, it's kind of reminiscent
Beautiful.
Of that.
Love it. And so you mentioned Gwen Moffitt. She was one of the first females to climb things before even the guys were climbing. You got a team of all female climbers. Do you feel like climbing is a place where women and men can kind of climb on the same level? Because in a lot of sports competitions, we separate that. And I feel like there's a lot of talk in the climbing community about how it's equal opportunity for everyone. Do you agree?
Yes and no. We do a lot of all women's events and clinics because we want to provide a space for women to feel less self-conscious about themselves whenever they're climbing. Separating genders is something we always do. We do have co-ed stuff that we like to hold, but our all women's spaces just create an environment, a community that isn't often seen in the climbing community. Oftentimes you go to the crag and it is a lot of guys, and there's nothing wrong with that. Most of my climbing partners are guys, but there's something really special about getting a group of ladies together and going out climbing and cheering each other on.
A group of strong women. So do you just work with women, or do you target other groups to get them out climbing?
Yeah, so that was a big reason why we rebranded, is because we wanted to do more co-ed things. We wanted to do more nonprofit, more stewardship, more youth events. So yeah, we changed that up a bit to just be more inclusive as a whole.
To work with maybe youth and at-risk individuals, or you...
We've been trying to get into the at-risk youth world, I suppose. We took a boys group out called Sons of the Saints, which is really interesting to have two female leaders and then a bunch of inner city youth boys from Louisiana who were extremely addicted to their phones. And we brought them out climbing for the first time, and some of them got 5 feet off the ground. Some of them got 50 feet off the ground.
Wow.
It just kind of depended on the individual. But nevertheless, like, each boy was just as psyched. Some of them had never seen the stars before.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it was pretty crazy. And like, being able to experience that with them was really profound. And it's something that we hope to continue to bring people.
That is very cool. So do you have a rule that you have to keep your phone down when you're climbing?
Well, not maybe a rule, but it's preferred. The reason why you go climbing is to be present and focused in the moment. I mean, this is true for indoor climbing as well. Like, it's a very physical thing. It's in your face. You can't necessarily be like Instagramming while you're climbing. I mean, I guess you could, but you might drop your phone.
Yeah.
Which actually one of the boys did. They dropped their phone, which is really, they broke it.
They probably got a much cooler view not looking at their phone, though, and just looking at nature.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So the whole purpose is to, set down your phone, take that time aside. And it's more so like a forced phone time, to put the phone down. Like, you kind of have to, versus like, oh, I'm taking moments away from it.
Yeah. So it brings some focus on the present moment.
Totally.
In a lot of ways. Very cool. And you also, in addition to focusing on diversity and inclusion, you have a land ethic that you put in place.
Yeah. Swing back around right quick to the diversity. Component. So we're the lead guide company for the Women's Climbing Festival. That's in Chattanooga, Tennessee. It's also in Bishop, California, but we do the one in Chattanooga, which is a whole lot of fun. And then we're helping out with the Color of the Crag this year.
Oh, very cool.
Yeah.
So what is Color of the Crag? What are these events about? Can you tell us a little bit?
So they're to help bring kind of like minority groups together. Mm-hmm. So Color of the Crag is all people of color and everything in between to come to Horsepins 40 in Alabama to celebrate over the course of 4 days and just go rock climbing and learn technical skills and make friends.
Very cool.
Yeah. And then the Women's Climb Festival is similar, but it's all women.
Nice. Yeah, very empowering. Yeah. So I just read this book called Into Thin Air. It's by John.
It's so
I can't
good.
Pronounce
it's Krakauer.
Thank you. Yeah. And he talked about all the trash that was on top of Everest, which is heartbreaking. Do you see that after these festivals and climbing trips? And
So the land ethic idea. Aldo Leopold presented an idea that we have these moral ethics towards each other. Like, we can both agree that killing is wrong, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, totally.
I want to, but you don't do it. You just don't.
Yeah, maybe sometimes. But he proposes this idea that we have these ethics towards the land. So agreeing that it is wrong to pollute a river, or that a river doesn't have a certain CFS flow. Like, it should have a certain, like,
what's a CFS flow for a
cubic feet limit per second?
Ah, okay.
Yeah. Yeah. So he's proposing that we just like have this care towards the land that comes innate in all of us. And we're trying to kind of present that via experiences and exploration. So you can't, there's a great quote that I can't think of right now, but I'm going to butcher it.
It'll come to you as soon as you're driving home.
Yeah. It's something along the lines of like, you can't love what you don't know. And you can't love what you don't experience, or something like that. So if you can't, if you're not experiencing it, you're not going to love it. So, mm-hmm. And if you don't love it, you're not going to care about it or take action to, keep it safe. So with these trips, it's kind of multifaceted for us. We're trying to provide a great experience for our clients, but we're also trying to give them these memories that they can take home and care a little bit about a space in the woods that they otherwise wouldn't have experienced.
Hmm. And are your trips just in local areas?
No. So that was another reason why we rebranded. Yeah. So Space Below Your Feet is now going to be operating in Mexico. We're doing a retreat down there. El Potro Chico. I'm really excited. I've been going for the past 5 years. So
I'm
going to be bringing some friends down there this year. And then we're going to do Thailand and Spain in 2020.
Wow. Those are big trips. Do you partner with local nonprofits down there? Or
so with El Potro Chico, we're hopefully going to partner with El Buho. So we're doing stewardship projects with each retreat. So the retreats are for clients to come in and explore like the areas and go rock climbing. But then there's a stewardship component attached to each retreat that we do. So our guides will either do rebolting or they'll do some kind of thing in the area that needs help. So in Mexico, it's building a school.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Very cool. Very cool. So what's next? Any special, I guess you talked about the Women's Climbing Festival. Do you have any retreats upcoming with Space Below Your Feet that people can sign up for?
Yeah, we have a yoga and climbing retreat in Chattanooga, Tennessee. It's November 7th through the 10th. So it's coming up pretty soon, and it's going to be beautiful because it's the changing of the colors.
Ooh,
so yeah, it's like the best time to be outside.
And hopefully it'll cool off a little bit for real.
Oh, it's going to be good. Yeah.
I think we got a 4-degree drop in the temperature.
But. So before you go, I'm interested in what was the impetus for this focus on diversity and inclusion? What caused you to be interested in all of that?
Oh, think because I never really noticed the difference in color or gender per se until it was pointed out to me.
So you were colorblind just sort of naturally.
Yeah, totally.
What I mean by that is it just really, in growing up and for you, there wasn't that much difference.
Yeah, I guess I never really thought about it, until it was kind of brought to my attention. I'm just like a generally friendly person and I like everyone about the same, just depending on your moral character. And it wasn't until it was kind of pointed out to me that there are less women that I started noticing, like, oh, hey, there are less women, and hey, there are less people of color, like, there are much less people of color. And I really want this to be available to everyone, because I really love rock climbing, and not just because it's a sport, but it's a lifestyle sport. It's something that's multifaceted in every asset of your life. It's helped me through, like, mental hardships, it's helped me through breakups, it's helped me through, like, so many things in life, and it's made me see the world. And I think that this should be available to anyone.
I'm glad I asked.
I know, that was a great question. It's like you've done this before.
I thought it was it took me a minute to get it out, but I thought it was a fantastic question.
Good stuff. So do you want to talk a little bit about some of the work you do on routes when you travel? I think I read on your website maybe you try to do some rebolting and maintenance.
Yeah, so it's definitely a blue-collar job. It's not something that you're going to, you know...
Getting your hands dirty again, I see, is a theme.
It's pretty heinous. And it wasn't until we... I really wanted to do this route in Mexico called El Sendero Luminoso. And it's 15 pitches. And so it's quite tall. It's like 1,500 feet, something like that. And these bolts, so these like fixed hardware that are in the wall that you use to climb up, well, they deteriorate over time. And I was told that the bolts at the top of this route are like, you know, end of life, which is really dangerous. Like if your hardware fails, then, you know, that's
it. You just fall. You fall with the bolts, basically.
Well, okay. Yeah, essentially. So me and my friend, we went up there and we replaced the top few pitches of this route, which took us, we started at 8 a.m. and we got done by like 3 a.m., something like that. It was like a pretty long day and you're like, you know, you're climbing the entire time. So it was pretty heinous, but we got it done. And I felt a lot of appreciation for that. And once you start really getting into the nitty-gritty of how your sport works and what it takes to put these lines up, it becomes something that you become really passionate about and you want to make it, you know, better.
How do you put them up? How do you bolt a mountain? How does one bolt?
That's a great question. Yeah, so you have a certain type of drill and you essentially – so this is rebolting. We're not bolting new lines. That's like a whole another beast on its own. We're fixing old lines. So you essentially have like a piece of equipment that is deteriorating and you would either remove it if you can and reuse the hole with like a different type of bolt depending on what the hole is. So like glue-ins, mechanical. I don't know. I could get really technical with all this. But for the sake of this conversation, I'll try to keep it fairly simple. you would either reuse that hole if you can or you would create a new hole and you would just – put a new expansion bolt in, and it would just be brand new.
Wow.
Yeah.
Good stuff. Well, if someone wants to figure out how they can get out there and climb with you, how can they find you?
Yeah, so we have a website called spacebelowyourfeet.org. We also utilize the social medias, Instagram and Facebook, so you can find us on those.
And what's your handle on Instagram? And
just space below your feet. Yeah, that weirdly wasn't taken.
Yeah.
You know? I'm surprised everyone's not like dying for that name.
That's lucky. excellent. So next up, we have Mr. Daniel Luke. He owns Stone Summit, which a lot of Atlantans are familiar with.
I love the name.
Love the name.
Yeah, Stone Summit.
Oh, Stone. That's right. Stone. You could be the face of Stone Summit. I'm just saying. Forget it.
Connecting have your people reach out to my people.
Yeah. And so, Daniel, you guys have three locations. You've got one off 85 in the Doraville area, Kennesaw, and just open in Midtown.
Yep, just across from the Fox.
So what brought you to climbing?
My aunt rented a local climbing gym in the area as a Christmas present for the whole family. We're talking aunts, uncles, grandparents, siblings, my parents. And, we went climbing and I remember distinctly thinking I was about 18 and I'm like, what? Like people climbing in buildings? Like it was really just kind of out there to me, but I went and had a good time and went to just immediately after that day, went to a local outdoor store, got a book on climbing, taught myself the knots with my shoelaces and my bedpost. And then about 2 weeks later, I was working there. So I kind of just dove in, as do many people in our industry.
Yeah. Wow. That is exciting. And so you started out working at a gym. Did you just kind of work up through the ranks, or did you continue to just kind of teach yourself and go outside and see what sticks?
Yeah, it's a really inclusive community. So the whole way I was, you know, being picked up by various people within the sport, one of the things that I really, really loved when I came in to the sport was I didn't find much barriers as far as sexism or ageism. I was picked up by, you know, or communicated and talked to by people in their 50s who'd been around in the sport for, you know, 30 plus years, and they brought me immediately outdoors, and I just, that passion just grew and grew and grew. But within the industry itself, I went from working at the gym to setting to coaching to then, I think, just naturally the sport is very explorative. So I started traveling the world and climbing as well, and just got to meet wonderful people through that.
So do you have a similar career path for people that work for you at Stone Summit? Is that kind of the corporate ladder in the climbing world?
Yes. It's almost sad because we have so many fantastic employees that come through the gym. And a lot of the people that I bring on typically are not climbers because, you know, at the end of the day, it is a customer service industry, at least for me. And so I'm trying to get people who have that cultural background of helping out others. And they, in turn, fall in love with climbing, and they leave me at the end. It's really sad. We have a lot of turnover because they just dive head in like I did, and then go off somewhere else in the industry. And good for them. But
yeah, that is, I mean, that should be, in a way, it's sad to see them go, but it's got to be nice to see them following their dreams. And you've got a role in that.
I absolutely love it. Yeah, no, yeah. One of my favorite things about my role is that I deal with a lot of youth, high school and college kids that are getting into this sport. And I have a tremendous passion for the development side, not only from the climbing aspect, but also from a developmental, you know, human side. So that's a lot of fun to see them develop.
What are some of those aspects that, let's say, a parent wants to sign their kid up for climbing lessons? Developmentally, what do you think some of the benefits are?
Well, it's really cool in the fact that, yes, it's individual. You are trying to push yourself, but at the same time, it relies on the people around you as well. And so there's that, you know, bonding, social, and holding up aspect. So that's really important.
That is. And so if I were an amateur climber and I wanted to go and climb some of the big mountains, do I have to qualify? Like in a lot of other sports, if you want to run an Ironman, I think there's certain qualifications. Is that something you see in the climbing community? Does that exist?
Well,
I'm asking for Stone. He's checking his schedule right now.
Well, I do, and I've got some other questions about fitness requirements. So, but let's get this one answered first.
Yeah, I mean, in the outdoor world, it's not like the Ironman in the fact that it's not an organization. It's there, which there's a beauty in that too. But there's a lot of the regulations aren't going to be put in place, and so I do highly recommend seeking out expert help when you're venturing out.
So
now,
call Savannah is what you're saying.
Yeah, absolutely. But that's also what the gyms can be really helpful for, as far as a knowledge ground and an area where we can help try to mitigate risk and educate and get you in a place where you can potentially go and travel outside and really see the beauties that the world offers.
Okay, one thing I love about radio is people can't actually see this, but I'm carrying around a good 20, 25 pounds more prosperity than I should be at the moment. I would love to join my kid and her boyfriend on some of this stuff. Is there a place in the climbing world for someone like me to kind of dip my toe in and begin to enjoy some of the benefits? Is there some low-risk stuff, and then maybe over time I could get more fit?
So I hear you're a physical specimen. That's what you're telling me. I think you look great. There's a couple points on that. I have had as young as 18 months old climb on our walls.
Oh, my.
I've had as old as 97.
Wow. Wow.
And so it is very accepting of all sorts of ages and sizes. And I myself, when I first started rock climbing, I ended up losing 50 pounds over the course of about a year. And so it certainly is, you know, a good workout, as a lot of sports are. And as far as getting started, you know, how do you learn to swim? How do you learn to ride a bike? You just got to do it.
Right.
Yeah. So just anytime you want, come on over to Stone Summit and we can get you on the wall, and get you educated and get you having fun.
Is it an expensive hobby? I mean, like compared to golf or hunting or fishing or, I mean, not compared to golf, surely it's yeah, not, right?
It's definitely not as expensive as golf. One of the nice things about, climbing, especially if you get into the outdoor world, is once you have the knowledge and gear, that stuff can last you a while. And, the memberships, a lot of people treat our facilities as gym memberships. So they'll come in once, twice, three, four, five, six, 7 days a week, depending on, how deep into it you are. And, with that, it's typical other gym memberships, about $60 a month, and that will get you, all the
climbing
you want.
$60 a hole to golf, so as many balls as I lose. Yeah.
So you said people use your gym just like a regular gym membership. Is it more than just climbing walls, or what else is available?
We do have yoga and an actual fitness facility. However, go climbing.
Don't just join it to do yoga.
You'll see what I mean. Yeah. It is extremely physical. It is gymnastic and body intensive, and you're going to get a workout. And sure, the longer you do it, just like when you go from walking to running, you kind of develop a natural footstep, and you'll figure that out in climbing as well. But with most people, you end up just challenging yourself the whole way. And so it's going to be just as difficult for you as a beginner as it is the professional, because they're just challenging themselves.
That's a good point. Kind of a selfish question. Does it ever get easier?
I mean, it becomes more natural.
Okay.
It becomes more natural. But like I said, I mean, for me personally, when I get on the wall, I am trying my absolute hardest. And I would suspect that most beginners feel the exact same way.
It's like, man, this is kind of painful, but fun, but it's got to just be, I feel light eventually, right? So tell me about, we kind of skipped. So you started working at a gym, worked your way up. Then how did Stone Summit get started?
So I have one other business partner, Darren Payer, and he has some kids that competed, and we would travel the country. I was coaching the kids at the time, and we would travel the country to various competitions, and we found the arenas and the formats, just a little lacking. And so we really wanted to raise the bar. We're both born and raised in Atlanta, and so we wanted to kind of bring home, something that could better and strengthen and grow the climbing community and create a center for that kind of social force.
Hmm. And so in what ways do you feel like you guys have raised the bar?
Well, when we first started out in 2010 with our Chamblee Tucker Atlanta location, we were the largest climbing gym in the country and the second largest in the world. And if you've ever been to one of our gyms, you'll instantly notice that they're pretty big. But also, we designed them a little bit differently in the fact that we didn't make, you know, the most use of our facility. We created large facilities and then built the walls on the exterior or kind of the perimeter of the building so that it allowed for those big open sight lines. We went with really colorful walls instead of, something that's actually stone looking. And that was to brighten the place up and make it a little bit more festive and fun.
How dangerous is this thing?
So,
like, if I go down to Stone Summit, we know I don't know what I'm doing. We know that, you know, I'm maybe not be the fittest person in the room. But,
yeah, it's not a good business model if I have people getting injured all the time. So, I will say, I think that life is inherently dangerous, and statistically, going climbing in my gyms is safer than getting in your car. And we put our babies.
That's
in
good
our,
perspective, right?
Yeah, we put our babies in our car. So I mean, that's gotta make you think a little bit. And we're not going to allow you to get yourself into a position that you're going to be in over your head. So we've got certifications and classes that help educate you prior to you doing things that are going to put people in immediate danger.
So you mentioned something in the earlier in the conversation that struck me. When you're recruiting for people to work for you and interact with your clients, you're looking for people that have that that hospitality mindset, right? That service mindset. So tell us a little bit about how you go about finding that type of person and what you do to kind of develop them from the point when you get them.
Well, like I said, I can teach rock climbing. I can't teach, you know, that customer service. I think that's, you know, brought up in the household. It's more cultural. And I have been very fortunate, and I've got to think that a lot of climbing gyms out there, it's similar, that for whatever reason, that the person who is, you know, friendly and outgoing tend to be attracted to our sport. And so as far as going out and finding people, they come to us, which is
that's
fortunate.
Fantastic.
So what's next for Stone Summit?
Well, Darren and I have never sought out to rule the climbing world. We really just wanted to kind of create something special for our hometown. And we are also looking for the right opportunities when they crop up. So we are often looking for different various locations. And we actually bought a piece of property in Dallas, Texas in roughly 2014. And that, with the economy, was just doing so well. The building costs, they ended up almost doubling by the time we were ready to actually construct. And so it didn't make financial sense at that point to go out there. So we ended up selling the land. And since then, I have kind of, you know, come to terms with some things. I've got a family. I've got an 8-month-old at home. I like doing things that take a lot of time, such as climbing. And I'm an avid road cyclist. And I can't do those things if I'm on a plane every week.
Yeah.
So
fair enough.
Yeah. So I am. I have my eyes, you know, looking at a couple spots throughout the Atlanta area, northern Atlanta as well. Real estate's expensive.
Yeah.
We're looking for the right spot.
Atlanta's booming.
Four words that I did not hear in that. Just an idea. Stone Summit Tap Room. Don't you think like a nice IPA?
No? Oh.
Maybe not.
Yeah. Drinking and rock climbing.
Maybe not.
Yeah, maybe not the best idea. Don't drink and climb.
Some actual gyms around the country have definitely, they've done that. And I think it's a great social spot for after your climbing.
After climb, yeah. After but climb. Maybe a juice bar, that kind of thing, right?
Sure, sure.
A juice bar, yeah. Or some coffee, cold brew. There's lots of things we can do. So do you have any special events coming up that you want to talk about? Any competitions? Or
well, I believe you know of one. You just competed in your first comp. Yeah,
I did,
right?
Thank you.
Margarita Mondays? What are y'all talking about?
Margarita Mondays. No,
we're off that. We tabled that idea, didn't we?
Yeah.
So every year we have the Try Hard Tournament, which is a series of three different competitions. We just had our first leg of it, the Crushville Comp. And then earlier of next year, we'll have the Masters of Midtown competition, which is going to be at our Midtown location across from the Fox Theater. And then we'll have our Send City competition, which will be back up at our Kennesaw gym. Typically, that one is held in March.
Excellent. So if someone listening wants to get into climbing, how can they find out more about you? Where can they find you?
SSClimbing.com.
Excellent. You guys on social media also?
Yep. Stone Summit Climbing.
All righty. Well, next up, we're going to hear from Eric Barros. Is that how you pronounce it?
Yes, it is.
All right. He is a volunteer with the Southeastern Climbers Coalition. So what does the Southeastern Climbers Coalition do? Exactly?
So we call it SEC, not SEC. But so if you ever hear me say that, Southeastern Climbers Coalition, we help preserve climbing areas in the Southeast, including Georgia, Alabama, Tennessee, and Florida. And we look to keep either property managers happy, the property in good shape, ensure that we have climbing access for future generations.
And by properties, you mean like state parks and
yes,
things of that nature?
Climbing areas.
Climbing areas, outdoors. Okay. And so what kind of work do you do to achieve that mission?
So we'll work with either parks and local government to ensure access and that they're happy with what we're doing, make sure we're abiding by their rules. We also will purchase land with climbing on it. We have various properties around the Southeast. We will also work with private land managers as well, people that are kind enough to let us climb on their land and ensure that we're following their rules.
So does that present a lot of challenges working with local governments and buying land? It seems like kind of a difficult process.
It is. It is a lot of work. A lot of trail maintenance, a lot of just meeting with other people, property visits, cleaning up and just being out there meeting them.
So when you guys go out, when do you do it? How do people recognize you? Do you guys have special like uniforms? Cause I feel like I'm out. I don't see it, but I know you're there.
Not really. I mean, a lot of climbers donate. We're donation based. We're all volunteer based. We only have 2 employees.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's everybody. The whole climbing community is the Southeastern Climbers Coalition. Everybody lends a hand. We set up tables at various events. We'll hold local events to fundraise money. We have competitions. You'll see us out there with a Southeastern Climbers Coalition table accepting donations and selling stuff.
So you guys going to be at the Women's Climbing Festival in Chattanooga?
Yes.
And Color the Crag and all that fun stuff?
We will.
Very cool. Very cool. And you personally look after, was it Boat Rock?
Yes, I personally look after Boat Rock. That is a small granite climbing area in Atlanta off Fulton Industrial.
Off Fulton, and is that's down by the airport, kind of, right?
Kind of, yeah,
a little further south.
Yep.
All right. So what do you do to maintain Boat Rock?
So I'll go and check up on it, usually go climbing, but also see if anything that needs to be done. If anybody has any concerns with the area, or questions, I'm there to help. They can contact me. Organize trail days. Lately, we've had a lot of filming there. Atlanta film crews have been using us.
I hadn't thought about that.
It's been a hot place.
So do you know anything that's been filmed down there?
I don't know the names of them specifically.
Yeah.
But I know there's been music videos and a couple films. So.
Oh, I didn't even think about the intersection of the Atlanta film industry and our climbing community. But that makes sense. That seems like a place maybe for scary movies or something like that. So how big is your team then? Is it just your one-man shop that
just
takes
one-man
care
shop.
Of the Boat Rock area? Okay.
Yep, and then we have different property managers for each location. It's all volunteer-based. Their job is to just check up on it and have anything. Yep.
It's doing good. So how many locations do you guys look after?
Dozens. We own specifically, I believe, 12 properties, but they're,
wow,
I don't know, 30, 40.
Wow.
I want to hear about the day job. Are you a chef?
Me?
You're
no.
A classically trained chef, though.
No, I work in the fitness industry.
Oh, yeah? What do you do?
I work for a company called Wahoo Fitness.
Okay. Are they in Atlanta, too?
Yes. We make cycling computers
cool.
And trainers.
And in addition to that, you have your own business.
I do.
Correct? So that's why Stone mentioned your hat earlier. It says Dirtbag Climbers on it.
Yep. I started my own business called Dirtbag Climbers just as a side hobby, sewing and making chalk bags and chalk pots for climbers and apparel.
Interesting. So back to SCC. What are some of the major accomplishments that you guys have had?
So we have... But SCC started with preserving Lookout Mountain and Sunset Rock in Tennessee. Climbing was banned there back in the 90s. Well, actually, it may have been before that, but we got it opened up in the 90s. It's a small crag, crag being just a rock face. It's right on Lookout Mountain. It's close to Chattanooga. We got access there restored, and that helped form the SCC. From that, we helped preserve Boat Rock, which was being destroyed for a neighborhood development. So actually, if you go there now, it's about half the size it used to be.
Hmm.
A lot of the rocks got blasted and destroyed, and there's neighborhoods there now.
Wow.
We've purchased a large climbing area west of Chattanooga called Denny Cove. And that's really great climbing. Yeah. And we just acquired that, I believe, in 2017. And we're working with the Tennessee Parks as well.
When you purchase land, so you buy the land, you clear the trails and bolt the routes that we just learned about doing. Okay.
Depending on the area, some routes may have been established, in a guerrilla style or just secretly.
When you say guerrilla style, can you elaborate on just guys just going up it?
Well, no, they'll go out there secretively and
okay.
And, yeah.
So you're making it safer for those people
yes.
now, too.
And then that jeopardizes good. Access. So us yeah. having it officially put together allows us to keep climbing there. So, you know,
okay.
And not getting in trouble.
Yeah. No, that makes sense. That makes sense.
And then we're currently working on our project. It's called the W Boulders in Chattanooga, and it's going to be a joint. It's going to be a downhill mountain bike park, a bouldering area, and hiking trails.
Wow.
So I was reading Jeff's bio. Is the reason I asked about being a chef.
Jeff.
I was reading. I was reading the wrong bio, but I want to hear a little bit more about your business because this is this is your life.
This is a good time to talk about it.
And I've seen again my youngest and her boyfriend, very avid climbers. And again, I really do think they're regulars over at Stone Summit. I'm going to find out, and if they're not, they will be. We'll make that happen. But I do know they have like the bag with the chalk. Walk us through how does that business work? How do you get customers?
Yeah, so that started off just on a whim, really. I had a sewing machine grandmother taught me, and I was like, well, I can make one of these. I don't really want to spend the money on one. So, started making them, and friends really liked them. And so now I offer just kind of customizable. They're pretty simple. Just you can get it how you want it, chalk bags and chalk buckets.
So I could go to like a website or go to you or
can.
Whatever and get a custom one that have Kelly's name on it or Matt's name on it or something.
Yeah, so it's just dirtbagclimbers.com and on there you can order either or whatever colors and size
very
you want.
Very cool. And are they likely, me not knowing anything about the sport, are they likely to have some preferences? So maybe I got to do a little secret espionage mission to find out if they like are there some bags that are deeper than others or lighter, skinnier, all that kind of jazz.
So a chalk bag's always good. That's pretty universal for a climber.
Okay.
Which is a smaller one you keep around your waist. But a chalk bucket is specifically for a boulderer. And that just stays on the ground and holds a large amount of chalk because boulderers like to use a lot of chalk.
So the bags are pretty universal. It's not like you're going to get a big long one or a little short one or whatever. And then it's just a matter of customizing.
Exactly what colors you want.
Very cool.
Yeah, so I make everything myself with the help of friends occasionally when I get really busy. It's just a fun hobby. So,
do you make cool hats like that too?
I do.
Really?
Yeah.
Can I go on and buy one of those after? Okay.
You can.
I'm just curious. What's your most popular design for the chalk bags? I'm curious.
I get a lot of 90s retro.
Oh.
A lot of people want lots of bright colors.
It's coming back. That makes sense. That makes sense. So what are some major accomplishments? I know Jeff, who you're sitting in for, kind of wanted to touch on that. And current projects.
So, I think one of the two largest accomplishments was Sunset Rock, Lookout Mountain. That was amazing that we were able to just allow access there again. The next one, Boat Rock, because that was one of the few climbing areas in Georgia that it's so close to Atlanta, and it was completely jeopardized at being just taken away from the community.
Is that the only climbing area in Atlanta? Outdoor?
It's the largest one in the Atlanta area. There's a small cliff line off the Chattahoochee called Allenbrook. It's got maybe three routes.
Interesting. And Tallulah Gorge, do you guys do anything?
Yes, we do. That is state park owned, and we work with them to keep them happy. And that is taller, a gorge climbing, so 200 feet usually. You require a pass to get down to the gorge floor, and depending on peregrine falcon enclosures. And then there's another very popular area called Rocktown in northwest Georgia.
Oh.
And that's a very popular bouldering area.
Very cool. And so are you working on buying any more land that we may be able to climb it soon or cleaning up any areas?
We always have trail days. We have the biggest project currently is the W Boulders. That'll be opened up soon. And then we just last year finished up Hell's Kitchen, which is outside Chattanooga. It's a grueling 2 mile hike, but if you really enjoy bouldering, it's worth it.
So maybe that's why Stone thought you worked in you were a chef working in a kitchen.
Hell's Kitchen.
Hell's Kitchen. Gosh. Yep.
Many times spent there.
That sounds exciting.
I just got on the website while you guys were talking, so you probably don't even know this, Grace. No. There's such a thing as Boulder Balm.
There is. Yeah. Help you grow your skin back.
Ooh, that's good. Yeah, I need that. Absolutely.
But there's some cool looking stuff on that website. Oh, some great colors and stuff. And the hat that he's wearing is on there.
So. Good. I know what I'm getting myself for my next birthday present. All right. So where can we find out more about both dirtbag climbing and the SEC if someone wants to get involved and volunteer with you guys?
Yeah. So the SEC, you can go to seclimbers.org. You can find information about us, our climbing areas, how to access certain areas. We're on Instagram and Facebook, SC Climbers as well, or Southeastern Climbers. We have a couple events, actually, that write a few down here. So we have Steep South is hosting a movie night actually at Stone Summit.
All right.
On the 27th of September. And the proceeds will go to the SCC as well.
What's the movie?
It is Steep South.
Oh, that's the name of the movie. Okay.
So, Filling the Void.
Filling the Void. What's it about?
I have not seen it yet.
You haven't seen it?
Have you watched it?
Savannah?
I believe it's about Deep Creek.
I think you're right.
You saw Deep Denny.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
It's Denny.
So close. There's the D.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, September 28th, so back to back at Rock Creek, we have Steep South is also showing the movie there. So if you can't make it to the one in Atlanta, you can make it to the one in Chattanooga. And we have a Denny Trail Dave. So we're just fixing up the trail in October 5th. And one of our biggest events every year on October 18th is BYOB at Chattanooga at the Crash Pad, which is a climbing hostel. And it's called Buy Your Own Boulder Field.
Oh, Stone was thinking IPAs.
Oh, there's plenty of beer there.
All right. Can we see you there, Stone?
Okay, color me there.
Can we convince you?
Absolutely.
Excellent. Well, thanks for joining us, everybody. And this was our Climbing Community episode on Atlanta Cares Radio. See you in a month.